Blog Talk Radio.
Praise and thanks. Mojuba Akoda, Mojuba Asheda, Mojuba Aluwa Mi, Apolabi Pega, Mojuba Araba Mi, Adesanya Awuyade, Mojuba Ogute Compound Ode Remo, Mojuba Baba, Mojuba Yeye, Mojuba Egun, to all the God children, Mojuba Egun, to all the Babalawos, the Ears, Mojuba Egungun, to all the chiefs, Mojuba Egungun, to all the Awos, Mojuba Egungun, to all those that are listening, who are tuned in. We give praise and thanks to the Most High. We say Ashe, 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 Ashe-o.
Ashe-o. Welcome to Sign of the Times, everybody. This is Queen Tahira. Sign of the Times is brought to you by the UAC, the United African Coalition for Justice and Human Rights. I am at the hospital. My brother has been diagnosed with stage 3 liver cancer, so I'm going to give my guests a few minutes to call in and get situated here to attempt to go ahead and do this broadcast, but should anything go awry, please excuse my absence for a few minutes. Thank you for tuning in. You're listening to Sign of the Times. My name is Queen Tahira. Welcome to the broadcast, and we'll be right back.
My ability. Distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, ladies and gentlemen, friends and enemies. I want to point out first that I'm very happy to be here this evening, and I'm thankful for the invitation to come here to Detroit this evening. I was in a house last night that was by on my own, but it didn't destroy all my clothes at all, but you know what happens when fire dashes through. They get smoky. The only thing I could get my hands on before leaving was what I have on now. And it isn't something that made me lose confidence in what I'm doing, because my wife understands, and I have children from this size on down, and even in their young age, they understand. I think they would rather have a father or brother or whatever the situation may be who will take a stand in the face of any kind of reaction from narrow-minded people, rather than to compromise and later on have to grow up in shame and in disgrace. So I just ask you to excuse my appearance. I don't normally come out in front of people without a shirt and a tie. I guess that's somewhat a holdover from the Black Muslim movement, which I was in. And that's one of the good aspects of that movement. It teaches you to be very careful and conscious of how you look, which is a positive contribution on their part. But that positive contribution on their part is greatly offset by too many other liabilities. Tonight, we want to discuss, and by the way, also when I came here today, I was a bit... Last night, the temperature was about 20 above, and when this explosion took place, I was caught in what I had on, some pajamas, and in trying to get my family out of the house, none of us stopped for any clothes at that point. 20-degree cold. I myself was. I had gotten them into the house of the neighbor next door, and... So I thought perhaps being in that condition for so long, I would get pneumonia or a cold or something like that. So a doctor came today, nice doctor too, and he shot something in my arm that naturally put me to sleep. I've been back in sleep ever since the program started in order to get back in shape. So if I have a tendency to stutter or slow down, it's still the effects of that drug. I don't know what kind it was. But it was good. It makes you sleep. There's nothing like sleeping through a whole lot of excitement. Tonight, one of the things that has to be stressed is that which has not only the United States very much worried, but which also has France, Great Britain, and most of the powers who formerly were known as colonial powers worried also. And that primarily is the African Revolution. They're more concerned with the revolution that's taking place on the African continent than they are with the revolution in Asia and in Latin America. And this is because there are so many people of African ancestry that's within the domestic confines or jurisdiction of these various governments. There are four different types of people in the Western Hemisphere, all of whom have Africa as a common heritage, common origin. And that's those of our people in Latin America who are black, but who are in the Spanish-speaking areas. Many of them oftentimes migrate back to Spain. Only the only difference being Spain has such bad economic conditions until many of the people from Latin America don't think it's worthwhile to migrate back there. And then the British and the French had a great deal of control in the Caribbean, in the West Indies. And so now you have many people from the West Indies migrating to both London, rather both England and France. The people from the British West Indies go to France, go to Paris, go to London, and those from the French West Indies go to Paris. And it has put France and England since World War II in the precarious position of having a sort of a commonwealth structure that makes it easy for all of the people in the commonwealth territories to come into their country with no restrictions. So there's an increasing number of dark-skinned people in England and also in France. And when I was in Africa in May, I noticed a tendency on the part of the Afro-Americans to what I call lollygag. Everybody else who was over there had something on the ball, something that they were doing, something constructive. For instance, in Ghana, just to take Ghana as an example, there would be many refugees in Ghana from South Africa. But those who were in Ghana were organized and were serving as pressure groups. Some were training for military. Some were being trained in how to be soldiers. But others were involved in as a pressure group or a lobby group to let the people of Ghana never forget what's happening to the brother in South Africa. Also, you would have brothers there from Angola, Mozambique, but all of the Africans who were exiles from their particular country and would be in a place like Ghana or Tanganyika, now Tanzania, they would be training. Their every move would still be designed to offset what was happening to their people back home where they had left. The only difference on the continent was the American Negro. Those who were over there weren't even thinking about these over here. This was the basic difference. The Africans, when they escaped from their respective countries that were still colonized, they didn't try and run away from the problem. But as soon as they got where they were going, they then began to organize into pressure groups to get governmental support at the international level against the injustices that they were experiencing back home. And as I said, the American Negro, or the Afro-American who was in these various countries, some working for this government, some working for that government, some just in business, they were just socializing. They had turned their back on the cause over here. They were partying, you know. And when I went through one country in particular, I heard a lot of their complaints, and I didn't make any move on them. But when I got to another country, I found the Afro-Americans there were making the same complaints. And so we sat down and talked, and we organized a branch in this particular country, a branch of the OAA, of the OAAU, Organization of Afro-American Unity. And that one was the only one in existence at that time. And then during the summer, when I went back to Africa, I was able to, in each country that I visited, get the Afro-American community together and organize them and make them aware of their responsibility to those of us who are still here in the lion's den. And they began to do this quite well. And when I got to Paris and London, there are many Afro-Americans in Paris and many in London. And in November, we organized a group in Paris. And just within a very short time, they had grown into a well-organized unit, and they, in conjunction with the African community, invited me to Paris Tuesday to address a large gathering of Parisians and Afro-Americans and Caribbean people from the Caribbean and also from Africa who were interested in our struggle in this country and the rate of progress that we have been making. But since the French government and the British government and this government here, the United States, knows that I have been almost fanatically stressing the importance of the Afro-American uniting with the African and working as a coalition, especially in areas of which are of mutual benefit to all of us. And the governments in these different places were frightened, because they know that the black revolution is taking place on the outside of their house, and I might point out right here that you have colonialism or imperialism, as the slave system of the West is called, is not something that's just confined to England or France or the United States, but the interests in this country are in cahoots with the interests in France and the interests in Britain, and by this one huge complex or combine, and it creates what's known as not the American power structure or the French power structure, but it's an international power structure. And this international power structure is used to suppress the masses of dark-skinned people all over the world and exploit them of their natural resources. So that the era in which you and I have been living during the past 10 years, most specifically, has witnessed the upsurge on the part of the black man in Africa against the power structure. He wants his freedom. And now, mind you, the power structure is international. And as such, its own domestic base is in London, in Paris, in Washington, D.C., and so forth. And the outside or external phase of the revolution, which is manifest in the attitude and action of the Africans today, is troublesome enough. The revolution on the outside of the house or the outside of the structure is troublesome enough. But now the powers that be are beginning to see that this struggle on the outside by the black man is infecting the black man who is on the inside of that structure. I hope you understand what I'm trying to say. Newly awakened people all over the world pose a problem for what's known as Western interests, which is imperialism, colonialism, racism, and all these other negative isms or vulturistic isms. And just as the external forces pose a grave threat, they can now see that the internal forces pose an even greater threat. But the internal forces pose an even greater threat only when they have properly analyzed the situation and know what the stakes really are. Just by advocating a coalition of Africans, Afro-Americans, Arabs, Asians, who live within the structure, it automatically has upset France, which is supposed to be one of the most liberal countries on earth, and it made them expose their hand. England is the same way, and I don't have to tell you about this country that we're living in now. So when you count the number of dark-skinned people in the Western Hemisphere, you can see that there are probably over 100 million. When you consider Brazil as two-thirds what we would call colored or non-white, and Venezuela and the Honduras and the Central and other Central American countries, Cuba and Jamaica and the United States and even Canada. When you total all these people up, you have probably over 100 million. And this 100 million on the inside of the power structure today is what is causing a great deal of concern for the power structure itself. Not a great deal of concern for all white people, but a great deal of concern for most white people. See, if I said all white people, then they would call me a racist for giving a blanket condemnation of things. And this is true. This is how they do it. They take one little word out of what you say, ignore all the rest, and then begin to magnify it all over the world to make you look like what you actually aren't. And I'm very used to that. So we saw that the first thing to do was to unite our people, not only unite us internally, but we have to be united with our brothers and sisters abroad. And
peace, everybody. Welcome back. This is Queen Tahiri. You're listening to Sign of the Times, Blog Talk Radio. And joining us tonight, we have Brother Darius, who is a representative of a page on Facebook called Black Male Teachers Peace, Brother Darius. How are you doing this evening?
Hey, Queen. I'm doing all right. Yourself?
I'm well, thank you. I'm at the hospital right now with my brother in the waiting room with my 7-month granddaughter. So there may be a lot of background noise here, but yeah, I'm hanging in there trying to stay positive.
Most stuff.
So how are you doing?
I'm doing fairly well, actually. I'm, just soaking it all in with school and this economy.
Yeah, I know you mentioned that you were still in school. So tell us a little bit about yourself and what made you begin this page on Facebook?
Well, I joined the military in 07 straight out of high school because I didn't think I was smart enough for college. And I didn't know how I was going to pay for college, even if I was smart enough. But, shortly after I joined the military, I started reading. I was mainly reading Black history, and that really started changing the way I looked at life. Books like The Autobiography of Malcolm X and Their Roots, Miseducation of the Negro, and a couple other books by Dr. Jawanza Kanjufu. And after that, I started realizing, I think it was a book by Dr. Jawanza who actually made me realize I never really had a Black male teacher except for maybe one math teacher. And I completely forgot about him until I was thinking about him years later. But he did have a significant impact on me nonetheless. And I just realized that if there were more like him out there, and they had some support, then that might significantly increase their impact to help stop us killing each other and whatnot.
Yeah, that seems to be a really big shortage of Black male teachers, especially, you know, at the elementary school age. We need more Black males to be involved in the educational process overall. But Why do you think that there is such a shortage of Black male teachers?
Honestly, I don't know. I mean, it's my understanding most of the people in college right now are females, and I know you have to go to college in order to be a teacher. And most males who go to college, they drop out, like I'm considering right now. But it's not rewarding enough. For one, I dare say, I was talking to my best friend last night. I was visiting him and his lady friend before I went to a concert. And we were talking about how she's been working at a school, elementary school, for 4 years. And she's just now getting to, I think, 49 or 50,000 a year. And he's thinking about joining Park Police to pay his bills. And he's talking about how they start you out with 49,000 or 50, somewhere, one of the two. And I was just amazed by that, how she could be working her butt off, rearing the future for 4 years, and still be just in the ballpark of where a police officer starts out at. Queen Fire, you there?
I'm sorry, I was muted. Let me ask you this. Do you think that if we have more African-American academies, similar to what Dr. Umar is attempting to open, do you think that would change the playing field?
Absolutely. I definitely commend Dr. Umar Johnson. I can't believe I didn't hear of him until, I think, last year. But, He's definitely worthy of respect, and I think it's been a long time coming. We needed something like what he's trying to provide back in the 60s, I think, or I'll say the 80s when they started pumping crack in our neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
If we'd had that, we might have never even touched the crack. You know what I mean?
That's right. That's right. It's a big difference. And I'm in an urban environment here in Cincinnati, and I see a big difference in how the police and society are dealing with this heroin epidemic than they are with the crack epidemic. Whereas they're really treating these people who are out here on heroin as victims, and making it seem so that they're part of human trafficking and everything else. When, you know, we didn't get half of that treatment. We were treated as criminals on both sides of the fence, whether they were using or whether they were dealing. It's just, it's amazing.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I'll never forget a documentary I watched during my early years in the military when I just started reading and just trying to soak up as much knowledge as I could. It was called The Last White Hope. I forget who made it, but it featured Ricky Ross. That's where I first learned about the real Rick Ross, the real freeway Ricky Ross, who was like the Walmart of cocaine, as some people called him. But he was talking about how his connects were with the government, pretty much, and they didn't get in any trouble at all when he got knocked. And the cocaine coming into the street, his streets that he was supplying, wasn't a problem at all until it started landing in white suburbia.
I see a lot of prostitution in the area that I was in. I got gentrified out of, but that's a whole other topic of conversation. But yeah, I mean, I see a lot of white females down there, a whole lot, and a whole lot of white males too. So it has definitely infiltrated into their community. So let me ask you this: as far as your military background and the education that you received, comparing it to, say, your college education, do you think that something of a military background, as far as education, would be helpful considering, you know, some of the ills, if you have, that we have in our community, or what approach would you recommend, say, if someone was looking at starting an educational academy for our youth?
I would definitely say look into technology, because that's the way of the future. If the whole house of cards doesn't come down any day now, but yeah, definitely technology, because that's where the jobs are right now. And military, they're decent as far as discipline goes, but other than that, all they're really good at is providing death and destruction, really. I mean, they'll make a man out of you, but you'll always have some biases in the back of your mind as far as brown and black people go, so to speak.
Well, I know post-secondary, I've learned a lot more on my own, I think, just doing my research based on what my interest levels are, compared to my college experience. Which one do you have a greater weight on, and, you know, have you learned more in as growing up as a young black male?
I'm not too familiar with post-secondary, honestly. I'll admit that for the sake of sounding ignorant. But college, really, I mean, I've learned a lot, I could say, in the short time I've been there. This is only my second semester I'm in. And I'm somewhat disappointed in it, not because they're not teaching a lot, but because there's no guarantee of a job once you graduate, once you get that degree. I think that's my main concern with it. And it's just so heavily overpriced also.
Mm-hmm. You said you're in your second semester there?
Right. But in the interest of full disclosure, I failed two classes in my first semester. I'll probably fail two more this one.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, are you getting your money's worth, would you say?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not actually not paying for it. The military is paying for it, and they're paying me to go. But I like the experience. I'll say that. I think life is more about experiences and knowledge and helping people than it is about getting money. But it's unfortunate that you have to have money in order to do those things. But in order to take care of those matters. But I'm just really disappointed that the degree that if I were to get it, it would not guarantee me anything at all as far as how to get money and how to better enrich my life.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, so how are you going to take that experience and use it?
Well, I think I'm going to take some business classes and just start a business. But I'm also, I guess you could say I'm counter-recruiting or something like that for another program that is an alternative to college. It's only for 18 to 24-year-olds. And it's a wonderful program, actually. Several of my cousins have gone through it, and it actually did wonders for them. Like, one of them is working for BET right now. He's stacking his bread and taking care of his daughter and looking fly while he does it, which is very hard these days because those daughters are not cheap at all, and neither are the sons for that matter.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what's up. My son has, gone through college and has several friends who are in the process of graduating at this point. And so they're talking about building a network amongst themselves that, you know, so that what skill one doesn't have, the other one very well could. And so do you think that, you know, especially with the attack on the black males, do you think that that is something that could work on a national level? And if so, are you looking at forming an official organization or are networking amongst your peers to do something on a national level?
I really don't know. I mean, I like to think that it would have some kind of impact and that I believe networking is key, definitely. That's actually what my business is surrounded by, network marketing or relationship marketing, using your relationships to better enrich your life and the other people's lives. But I don't know if we can do it. There's just so much division in the black community. Like, we have run a mile to spend money with our white counterparts or with our Asian counterparts, but we won't walk across the street to spend the money with our black brothers and sisters. It just baffles me, really.
Well, I know right now there's a blackout of mainstream businesses, and there's an effort to encourage people, if they're going to spend on this holiday season, to do it with black businesses. So is that part of the Willie Lynch syndrome that we're still suffering through? And if so, how do we begin to overcome that and build more unity, especially when it comes to economics and politics and education?
I think it just, like you said, it starts with education. We have to reach out and each one teach one. And we definitely have to get them while they're young, because I believe it was Frederick Douglass who said it's easier to build strong children than it is to repair broken men. And so once people reach a certain age, I think they'll just, it reminds me of the Star Wars. I hate to bring it up, but there was this scene in the movies where they didn't want to wake up. They didn't want to put this one guy through Jedi training because they thought he was too old, even though he looked like he was about 8 or 9 years old. So I thought that was absurd. They said he was too old, but sure enough, I just think it's funny that how they said they don't like to put people through the training after a certain age. And once you start showing some black people knowledge of self at a certain age, they start to think you're crazy. Once they reach a certain age and you start trying to show them certain matters, they think you're crazy and they don't want anything to do with you after that. If they might leave you alone, they might report you to somebody, or they might actually hear what you have to say. It's all a matter of chance, I think, you know, how they were raised.
Absolutely, absolutely. I do see a coming together of the community a lot more than I have in the past. And, you know, it's following, again, so much mainstream media focus on the attack against black males. So I'm seeing some coming together, if you will, of black men and black males and boys, and on a level that if we are smart about learning from our history and learning from the things that we've been through in the past, this could be a phenomenal thing. But if we continue to take the approach that it's someone else's job to do it, or someone else's responsibility, or, you know, we can't get past personal differences, you know, I'm afraid that at some point that it may be too late. And, you know, I've heard the black male being described as an endangered species. Well, you know, there's a reason why our condition is in the condition that it's in. So talk a little bit about, you know, why you want people to get involved in your Facebook page and, you know, some of the vision that you have for bringing some of these elements together.
That's an excellent point you made. I'm reminded of a quote by, I believe it was Albert Einstein, who said, "Evil flourishes not because it is stronger or something like that, but because good men do nothing. Evil flourishes, yeah, because good men sit by and watch it." Something to that effect. That's what you just reminded me of. But as far as the page, I really don't know. I've been looking for some new leadership to help me with it, because I had two people previously, but they just kind of abandoned the mission. But it'd be nice to get some more black teachers in there. So that's what the group was originally for, to support them and show them love. But it could actually be what you were talking about, a place for black people to come together and discuss ideas and further personal development on social media.
All right, y'all. Well, again, the title of the page is Black Male Teachers. I'm going to encourage some of the people who are a part of Sign of the Times and those who support the network to become a part of that page. And so, let's encourage some more participation and continue this dialogue, Brother Derek. I'm going to go ahead and let you go and resume my evening here at the hospital with my brother. So I appreciate the time that you took to call in tonight. And again, you know, we appreciate you here at Sign of the Times. Reach out to Brother Derek on Black Male Teachers on Facebook. Brother Derek, do you have anything that you would like to say in closing?
Yes, I would definitely encourage your listeners, if they know anybody 18 to 24 who's looking for work and they want to get paid training, on how to fix computers and a paid internship at a Fortune 500, check out a company called Year Up. They're only in certain cities. It's a year-long program, but it's definitely worth the time. They will set you straight. They will put you on the right path as far as financial independence goes. And it's year, like annual, 1 year and up. You Google that and it'll be the first thing to pop up.
You said Gear Up with a G?
No, Year. I'm sorry.
Year, Y-E-A-R-U-P?
Yep. Year Up. Y-E-A-R.
All right. All right. I'm going to look that up on Facebook now. So if you can't find it, it'll be on our Facebook pages for Sign of the Times and Queen Tahira and New Power Radio Network. So thank you, Brother Derek. Let's do this again in 2 weeks where we are with getting folks to participate in the group and bringing more attention to what your vision is.
All right, Queen Fire, I appreciate you sincerely. Take care, and I'm praying for your brother.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that as well. So until tomorrow night, we'll have Live and in Living Color here on the ground here in Cincinnati, Ohio, Brother T-Bone and Brother Derek Blassingame talking about gentrification and could your neighborhood be next. So in the meantime, between time, this is Queen Tahira signing off for the evening. Thank you for your patience and your support, everybody. I love y'all, and I couldn't do this without you. I'll talk to you soon. Peace.
My earthly body inner peace. That's where my prayer to get my earthly.
Hey.